Well, hi everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program from BAS. I'll be your host of today's program. Well, today we're really excited to continue our series that we've titled Talking Textiles. For this series, you know, we are bringing in various people throughout the textile industry, from management to technical experts, as we discuss the current market for different types of textile products, discuss sustainability, the use of cotton in the mill, and just kind of all those different aspects and components that goes into maybe some of the things that we typically don't think about depending on where we're at in that supply chain. And as always, I'm joined by industry consultant Bob Anishak. So Bob, welcome again back to the show.
Thank you, Jennifer. How are you doing today?
Doing good. I will say, you know, if our listeners know, Bob and I always end up, you know, talk about what's happening, where we're at. And so for this episode, I'm actually over in near where Bob's at, but in Memphis, Tennessee. And I will say, I was not quite expecting to wake up to 40 some degree weather. I was talking to some customers earlier today, and I was like, did Memphis forget to pay the heat bill around here? Because it is very cold to compare it was yesterday.
Is the harvest done?
Yes, I actually drove up around from down from near Vidalia and came up through Natchez and all that area yesterday driving up. Actually took the long way. It's about a, you know, about a, maybe about an extra hour or so just so I could see what was happening. And I saw one or two kind of fields here and there, but harvest just about done. Gins are going wide open. So yeah, it's kind of that time of year. And I know that a lot of our friends we've talked to, merchants and others, are patiently and impatiently waiting for the cotton to get to them so they can get it out to our downstream team.
Cool.
Yeah. But I'm also excited today, and it's my pleasure to introduce today's guest, Tom Boehm, who's a blogger, well-known LinkedIn personality, but who also happens to be a circular knitting machine mechanic at Canadian knitting company Stanfields Limited, based in Nova Scotia. So, Tom, thank you so much for joining. And, you know, I'm sure it's probably a different weather scene up there. And it's funny because I've never been to Nova Scotia, but my husband, every time it comes up, he always tells me about how he went up there to get a sailboat one time in freezing cold and just said, yep, that is not a place I need to think I could live full time.
Well, when you said 40 degree weather, I was thinking Celsius and I was thinking, wow, it's hot down there.
It's hot, yeah.
that's it.
Fahrenheit. So I'm trying to convert that to Celsius. It's been a warm fall here. We've been lucky. It's been, I mean, I think it was 10 degrees Celsius today. So what would that be in Fahrenheit? Probably around 40.
Yeah. So, and it's kind of funny that you're saying that's warm because I'm thinking, oh, no, I've lived in the South long enough. It's like thinned my blood out. So, but wonderful to have you here. And, you know, Tom,
thank you for having me.
You've had an accomplished career in textiles, but you also represent a new generation of workers in the North American textile industry. And for me, one of my, you know, favorite things is to learn kind of the story and everyone's story. And, you know, I it's interesting. And some of the things, you know, you refer to yourself as kind of the thinking man, circular knitting machine mechanic on LinkedIn and other places, which I think is great because I love that story. And before we kind of dive deeper, though, into maybe textiles and some of the stuff that we're going to, you know, questions and other things in the industry, wondering if you would maybe tell our listeners maybe a little bit about your background and, you know, a little bit about how you kind of came into this space.
Well, I got married and I moved to Japan when I was 20. We lived there for 10 years and I taught on nothing. I taught English for 10 years. I didn't have so. When I came back home, a teaching degree that doesn't exist doesn't get you many jobs teaching. So I got a job at the local textile mill where my parents were living at the time. That's the reason why we moved to such a small town in the middle of nowhere, is my parents were here and it seemed to make sense to live near one set of our parents. So anyways, I got a job there as a knitter working piecework on the back shift. I did the back shift for maybe 4 years and then I went on the day 3-4 years before I got trained in old textile lingo as a fixer. And I've been doing that ever since. And since then, pretty well everybody's retired. I think there used to be like 15 people on day shift. There's three of us now, so.
Wow. And so as someone who's not, and maybe some of our listeners, what is a old fixer? So just so we know, for those of us not in the textile space.
We keep the machines going, repair them, do whatever needs to be done to them to keep them in good repair.
Oh, wonderful.
But now, I mean, now I do everything in the day. When I go in the morning, I get there before anybody else, and I take the garbage down to the first floor because we're on the third floor, and then I go back upstairs and try to clean up if there's
Yeah.
any in the last shift, and then I'll get the machines ready for the knitter that comes in a little bit after me and get my own machines going because I always run a load of machines. So a little
Oh,
bit of it.
you put some great videos up on LinkedIn, by the way.
Thank you.
Close-ups, yeah, of the machinery. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's the moniker Thinking Man's Circular Knitting Machine Mechanic was given to me by a fella who lives in Dubai. I think he's from New Zealand originally, but yeah, he said that to me once, and I thought, well, that would be great, so I left it there. So
Yeah, that's a pretty cool tagline.
yeah.
Well, you've done a great job in terms of marketing yourself and all of your thinking about the trade and life in general. And you and I've been pen pals, I think, for what? How many years now?
Probably around 2015, maybe
Yeah, something
somewhere
like that.
around.
Something like that. And you've been really prolific. And again, on LinkedIn, you have a huge following, so it's an important following because lots of serious folks on LinkedIn. It's not just,
Yeah.
any social media service,
There's not a whole lot of opportunity in my mill for growth or advancement, so at least LinkedIn gives me a place to learn more and expand myself in other directions. Not necessarily professionally, but at least it gives me an outlet for my creativity. So.
There you go, and you show it all the time with that, so. But a little bit on the textile business in general. I mean, what kind of changes have you seen, and what kind of challenges do you see? I mean, we're all, obviously being in North America, we've seen a lot of change, a lot of it negative. We're seeing a little bit of renewed activity recently, and I'd be curious because again, you're on the production floor,
Yeah.
kind of what's your take? So.
Well, for changes in my own mill, I mean, it's just the fact that there used to be 15 people in my room and there's three now basically says it all. We tried to, I mean, I suppose they would still say we are implementing lean. We cut a lot of costs. We've cut things down to the bone. So there's three people left and I'm pretty busy every day and there's not much time if anything unexpected happens. I can't say I really like the way things have been cut back, but that's what it takes to survive, I guess. So,
How about your equipment? Have you had to order new equipment to stay competitive, or
no,
you still use them?
I had a machine that needed a new motor, a Monarch knitting machine, and it was $700, and that was considered an expensive fix. So we won't be seeing any new machine
Gotcha,
soon.
gotcha.
Well, I was gonna say, between that and probably being able to get parts, it's probably made it a little hard.
Yeah,
On some of the machines.
I better keep my old machines running well. That's what I figure. So I did get my motor, so it's on the way. So.
Yeah, and and that's one of the things talking about change in machines and just the way of doing business. And Bob kind of alluded to that, some of the change in the industry. And you mentioned earlier talking to some of those in the global space of trade, textile, apparel, and how are you seeing maybe over the next couple of years, some of the changes in that space, some of the things affecting sourcing decisions. And do we see that, the word buzzword I say surround sustainability is kind of thrown out there with traceability, but are you seeing that change some now and the effect it's having with brands and retailers these days in, that space in textile in general?
I think, assuming that the world goes back to normal sometime soon, I think we'll see. Those companies that have already positioned themselves, like Vidalia Mills or like TS Designs or some of these other interesting companies that are sourcing their stuff locally and doing it local and marketing themselves that way, they'll see an increase in their business. I think a lot of the older businesses will be happy to see a return to normal, and they'll grab their cheap supply chains, even if they're more difficult, as quick as they can, and try to go back to what they'd consider normal. But I think those that are already positioned in the sustainable industry will see an increase in their business. I think there'll be more people interested in buying their products.
Really interesting. So you think a lot of this happened because of the pandemic, in terms of a lot of these changes have been accelerated? Because I always thought I saw some of these changes that happened, were starting before the pandemic, but then a lot of these things were like kind of accelerated.
But I think it was accelerated by the disruption in the supply chain, and the accident in the Panama Canal also sort of highlighted it, how reliant we were on a very fragile supply chain, right? And how
Boy, that
much
was for sure. Yeah.
any little impact could affect the whole chain of events.
How
At the
about in
same
Canada? I mean, are there port backups there too?
There's port backups. I mean, we just spent a month with almost nothing running in the knitting room because we didn't have yarn. And some of that yarn just comes from Montreal, but they're short staffed. They couldn't get us the product because they didn't have enough staff to make it. And there's a staffing problem all through Canada. So even our Made in Canada product that we buy, the yarn that we buy from Made in Canada, we have trouble getting. And the stuff that was coming from overseas was just really delayed, right? So some of that was due to us, some of it was due to the supply chain issues. So, but I mean, yeah, it started before the pandemic, but definitely the pandemic brought it to a head.
You
I
think
think
reshoring is like a thing?
it's a thing for some companies, but like I said, I think there's going to be companies who will want to keep things down to the lowest common denominator as much as possible. So, I think those companies that are positioned to try to bring things back will benefit from it.
Do you think, Tom, and I don't know, maybe from your standpoint, one of the things that we hear a lot is that consumers' attitudes are changing, and they are really, and consumer buying habits are changing, being online, doing that, and some of the trends that consumers are potentially looking for are being moved into or transitioned into that supply chain, into that space of brand retailers all the way through. Are you seeing, are you guys hearing, as far as your customers, they're mentioning more about those trends and things changing based off consumers' buying habits changing? Is that something that you're hearing as a reasoning behind certain things?
I don't hear a whole lot of that part of the business in my area, but I do know that our online sales have gone up dramatically over the years. Now, we have our factory in Canada, but we also blend product from overseas, quite a bit of product from overseas, along with our Made in Canada product. And we also have a factory in the States, Longworth Industries. So all of that is mixed together. But the online sales are really high.
So go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, thanks, Trevor. Tom was just going to ask, talk about your typical product. What are you guys making these days?
A lot of underwear, undershirts.
Right.
We make product for L.L. Bean, a two-layer thermal shirt. We make a lot of thermal fabric that's sort of got the waffle stitch on it. And we make a we are we have very old course machines, but they're going pretty steady because there's not a whole lot of companies that still make that fabric here. Now, there was a few Chinese companies exporting course fabric this year, so we were a little bit worried that we'd see a downturn in our course orders, but so far they're still steady going most of the time. So
And do you see a lot of those trends like that? Just wondering, it seems because in talking in the textile space and moving down, you mentioned some of it earlier, some of the machinery in there is fairly older
yeah.
machinery and it's been there for years, but then we see this whole movement to fashion trends changing, but it's still the same machinery making that. And is that something that you guys, and how do you, I guess, from that adoption space to the new trends in fashion, how do you guys cope with having the older machinery adapt to some of that?
I mean, I suppose you're limited to a certain point, but even your older machines can still make your basic stitches, and after that, it's how it's cut and how it's sewn together. So our machinery, mostly, it's about keeping it going. I know we've been having trouble with our old nap in the fleece fabric, and they have made some updates. I know a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I bought a pair of sweatpants from my fleece machine, and the waistline came up past my belly button. And I went to the designers. I said, "Hey, really, really, are you gonna do that?" They said, "Well, you're supposed to roll it down." I said, "I don't want to buy a pair of sweatpants that I have to roll
Roll
down."
down.
Oh, that's really funny. That's funny.
I see that has changed. So we have updated some of our stuff. Style could use to be updated, definitely. They're very long, I guess, to compensate for shrinkage. But yeah, so we keep things going. I mean, it would be wrong of me to say they're squandering an opportunity, but we are uniquely positioned. We're a full-fledged mill. We have knitting, dye house, laundry, cutting, sewing, everything under one roof, all the operations there. I mean, with the right guidance, I think the opportunity is there to do really cool things, but anyways, we're doing what we're doing.
And you
Yeah,
have,
and go ahead, Bob.
I was just saying, and Jennifer, Tom, you must be running a lot of cotton, right? You must be running a lot of cotton. Is
Yeah, I
that
run a lot of cotton, a lot of 50-50
right?
poly cotton mix, and then the LL Bean machines, which have been running steady since I started working there. They run poly cotton wool mix, poly cotton wool mix. So Bean has always been sort of an anchor, LL Bean, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and and that's really interesting because a lot of the things we do around the cotton space, we've seen that they're globally and others, we've seen there's a lot of strained relationships that are happening between brands, suppliers. There's a lot of tension that's happened. There's been a lot of, I say, financial pressure, other things where, things haven't been paid to mills and others. So it's put a lot of pressure on a lot of things. We're seeing now, and you mentioned it earlier, transportation problems, port problems, there's cotton prices. So, there's a lot of stuff that's happened. And I feel like we've talked about on the show before, this has been really amplified, and especially in the cotton space and the textile space the past year and a half or 18 months with the some of that. But how do you see, with all those things happening in the background, it's a lot that's been going on. And how do you see, or from your space and what's happening, how do you see the industry coping? And are there some things you've seen changed or that maybe should have been changed? Some things that changing faster, maybe the industry is changing faster, but just interested to know, like, how do you see it coping based on your many years of experience?
Well, I don't see where I am changing much. But the industry as a whole, again, I think those mills, those factories that are positioned for a sustainable sourcing and sustainable industry, they'll be in a better place than those that are trying to do it the old way, because there is a growing market for the product. I don't think it's probably growing enough to take over the market yet, but there's definitely going to be an increase in it. So, and like I noticed with price increases at the grocery store, that the difference between organic products and regular products shrinks, because the regular products prices are going up. Organic,
Yes.
ironically, has not gone up much with the price increases. And I think that will be the same with everything else. We'll see the regular product prices go up, but the locally sourced products probably won't go up as quickly as the from overseas. And so that price differentiation will start to shrink, I think, between local products and products that are being brought in from overseas, which could only be
That's
good.
interesting. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right because I think for many years that was kind of that market and where things, brands and others potentially could, say, hey, yep, it's cheaper to make or cheaper to do, kind of justify some of that. But I think you're right now with supply, with logistics and all, that price differentiation is changing.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how companies adapt their business model, their sourcing models to adjust to that and
Yeah.
justify not, and justify going that long.
Yeah. People are willing to pay extra if they're getting
Yes.
a quality product. Like, I'm willing to pay a fair amount extra if I know I'm going to get a product that's going to last me, right? I'm not willing to pay extra for a product that's going to be the same as something I could go buy at the dollar store or go buy at Walmart, you know?
Right.
So
Yeah.
there's got to be bang for the buck there, but then I think most people are willing to pay a little bit more if they think it's going to last.
Yeah, well, you brought that up. I even saw the other day the Dollar Tree is going to raise their prices, and that's and we've hit a something here. The Dollar Tree will no longer be the Dollar Tree. It is like a dollar. It'll be something. I think they said $1.50, and I'm like, oh
Dollar
gosh, the
50 tree.
inflation. So no, I think you're exactly right. And Tom, you mentioned your customers and those coming in, and I know you're. I'm sure the conversations had with your meal and others, it's around the word we throw around sustainability and all. But from your standpoint, how do you guys really describe or talk about the things that you're doing that, as part of your sustainability messaging to your customers that you talk to? Is there some commitments that you guys have, or have you already been doing this?
I've never heard a whole lot of discussion about sustainability around my company, in all honesty. So I think we'll probably start to hear it more. I mean, we're so short-staffed now. We're running on such a skeleton crew that we're basically putting out fires most of the time, and I don't think anybody's really thinking about sustainability. We take the yarn that we can get right now, and we make what we need to make to get it out in time. So I hope I see that conversation start in the future. I really do.
Tom, here's a writer's question. Where do you get your inspiration from for all your posts on LinkedIn?
Oh, when you're tying 104 cones on a machine, you got a lot of time to
There you
think.
go. That's honesty. That's what I wanted to hear. Yeah, I wondered. Yeah.
Well, but I think some of it too, though, Tom, I think it's really where I feel like, and I think it's great. And I love seeing the posts and I love seeing all the things because I think that the new, we've been with COVID, we've been at home, we've worked in virtual and other things, but I've seen that interest from consumers and that trend where they just want to know, like, where is this? Oh, it's not much. This is like, no, they want to know, like, down to like the mechanics of it, where it's being made, where it's being spun. And I think that's just great that you've seen that and being able to tell that story of what's happening in a way that people can relate to, that maybe it
Yeah.
hasn't been there before.
And there's a lot of amazing companies out there right now doing amazing things. So yeah, I've been trying to showcase different companies lately. This week I plan on doing one on TS Designs. So I waiting for some photos from Eric Henry, and then I'll get that going. So
Yeah, and Eric is fun. He is not far from me here in North Carolina. Eric and I've worked together on some projects. He's done some things for me, and I love it because the growers that he works with, a lot of those are our growers. And when I was, being a rep in the field, were some of my growers. And so I love the things he's done. So that's wonderful. And it's really interesting just how small I say the industry is, but then on a global basis, to be global industry, it really is a little, it's a small industry. And I love the stories that we can tell of the great things being done.
yeah.
Well, wonderful. Well, Tom, I do appreciate you coming in and would love to know if any of our listeners would like to connect with you, whether it's on LinkedIn or whatever way. What is the best way for them to follow along with some of the great stories you're telling and other things that you're doing?
Add me on LinkedIn, or if you got a question for me, they can send me an email.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate that so much. And thank you again for being on. And Bob, thanks again for your help. And I love hearing all the stories and great things that are happening in our textile space and telling this through, the podcast and other mediums. And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us and hope that you enjoyed our show. Should you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, please email me at e3cotton@basf. Also, don't forget to visit us on Facebook and Instagram at E3 Sustainable Cotton. Thanks so much and have a great day.